It's been almost 5 years since we started this journey of building a software tool to liberate and educate entrepreneurs who wanted to change the world. This podcast reveals the tips and strategies we and our fellow entrepreneurs have used to start, build, grow, and scale their companies. My name is Dave Woodward. Join me as I take you behind the scenes so you can hear what works, what doesn't, and the strategies being used to get your message out to the world. Welcome to Funnel Hacker Radio. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Funnel Hacker Radio. This is going to be a fun one. I've had the opportunity of having Brandon Poulin on before, but we've had the opportunity. Both of our companies have grown quite a bit since our very first podcast years ago. And so I thought it'd be kind of fun to bring Brandon back and talk about what's it like to really build a business, to scale a business. What are the things as a business that's doing well north of $10 million type of what are you struggling with? What are some of the things as a business owner you deal with? So with that, welcome back to the show, Brandon.
Yeah, it's great to be here, man. Whole different world since we last met on here.
You have a baby now, for one. Congrats. That's super cool.
It's awesome, man. I love it. Being a dad's best.
It's been fun just to see. We're down with Dean and Tony yesterday down in Vegas at part of the mastermind.com affiliate launch, and just having the conversations with Dean and some of the phases that he's going through in his business. And as I looked around the room, there's a lot of top affiliates there, and I've seen been with these guys for years, and just seeing the trials of a business owner as they grow and as they struggle with growth, and how do you deal with scale? So those are some of the main things I'd like to kind of address and talk about here. So with that, Brandon, as you take a look, and again, as far as numbers, that's up to you as far as what numbers you want to disclose or not. I know business is kind of private when you get to a certain size.
It'll be on the ink list soon, so I guess it's no secret.
Awesome. Well, then let's talk about the numbers right now.
Well, I mean, 2018, we closed out just under 30 million. So,
dude, that's fantastic.
It was just an incredible year. It's explosive growth and a lot of fun. Building a company is like the hardest but most exciting thing I've ever done.
I totally agree with you. I could not agree more with you than that. Oh, it honestly has been one of the funnest things we've ever done as well. So as you take a look, we're halfway through the year here, just over halfway. How's 2019 looking?
It's looking good, man. 2019 was like a very foundational, pivotal year for us. You know, we're not going to have 4x, you know, growth like we had the last, I mean, it was more than 4x 2 years ago, but just multiplication growth. But you get to a point where it's a little different at scale. So it's going to be a great year. We're absolutely going to grow this year. We're already on pace to definitely beat what we did last year. And so it's a very, very foundational year for us just now. And getting into quarter three and four, are we really dialing in and spending our time focusing on the actual scaling part rather than just all the other things that you have to do when you get to this kind of point, at least for us in our kind of business cycle? You know, the things you have to do to fortify your land, so to speak, to keep what you have, to keep things running, there's so many aspects, you know.
I'd love to kind of dive into that. So take, for example, last year, it was about this time you actually were out here. We did our CEO swap and had a lot of fun with that. But one of the things you said while you and I were meeting here, that was, you know, Dave, one of the main things I've noticed about leaders is leaders lead. That's it. They just lead. Leaders lead. And as you look at scaling a business, how have you found leaders within your company to be able to confidently hand things off to and allow them to lead without micromanaging them?
Absolutely. That's a good question. I mean, delegation is like when I teach my team about this and as far as identifying leaders, leaders identify themselves. You will know who's a leader based on how they identify themselves. They're going to be bringing ideas. They're not going to be scared. They're going to be the ones putting themselves out there. They're going to be the ones getting stuff done. Like it'll become very evident to you who is leading in your team. And if it's not, just go start talking to some people in your organization and you'll figure it out pretty quick. But as far as, you know, delegation and how do you delegate and when do you delegate and how do you know you can trust someone and all that, they're all really great questions. And the answer is not perfect, but what I've tried to explain to my team, at least, because you'd have to see, you know, we have about 9 departments. And so we have essentially 9 kind of microcosms inside of the company that I run. And so essentially they all kind of operate like their own little company inside. Right. And so, what I tell my team is it's a pendulum. It's like, you gotta give some rope and then you gotta inspect what you expect. Right. So if you don't give rope in the first place, then you're always like, you might as well not have brought them on, because if you don't give people an opportunity to be responsible, right, they have to have responsibility to be responsible. If you don't give them that rope, then like they're never going to have an opportunity to show you that they can do something with it. And so a lot of times the mistake I do see is, number one, people don't give any rope, right? It's like, and that happens a lot. Like, I've given a lot of rope to some people on my team, and then, you know, they turn around and they don't do the same thing. And you're like, what's going on here? But, so that can happen. I think the second thing is, once you do give rope, there's a trust factor that's developed, and it takes time. And so initially you have to really give some rope, but then set up a residual meeting or check-in or something so you can inspect what you expect, right? And over time the rope grows and you give more and more because you build this trust. And so that's how I kind of try to explain the delegation process. Cause it's not black and white. It's very, like, you know, it depends on what the thing is, you know, what the project is, the person, how long they've been there, and how much experience they have, right? There's a lot of variables, but I think if you kind of stick with that image in your mind of giving that rope, and then as you build that trust, it just gets longer and longer. But at the end of the day, you know, you still want to have accountability. I think my favorite kind of words or topics right now in my head is metric-based leadership. And metric-based leadership is really simple because the numbers never lie. And so as long as people are accountable to numbers that matter, right, they have to matter, have to be the right numbers. As long as they're accountable to those numbers, then ultimately the numbers will tell the story for you. You don't have to guess if they're doing their job, right? And so those two things combined, I think, make it a lot easier to delegate, for sure.
I love that. So how often are you following up with your direct reports?
So I have a check-in with each of my direct reports once a week. And I attend that probably 70% of the time. If I don't attend it, then they send me like an email recap of, here's all the things. And, you know, that check-in has an agenda, it's dialed in. And, you know, and that's the thing too, is that, you know, that's what works for me. And I think even in the beginning, though, you bring someone new on, we have an orientation. So for the first 90 days, there's, you know, 20 touch points in 90 days, right, in the beginning. So we try to kind of install these systems and these kind of checkpoints and these processes initially. And then it's like, you don't have to remember, right? Like, that's the hard part. It's like, oh, I delegated this stuff. And then the only time it comes back up is when there's a fire or when there's a problem, right? But by then it's too late. And so that's why you try to get ahead of things and schedule them, right?
I love that. I know one of the things that's been fun is I've watched you and your business grow. You made mention as far as, you know, 8 or 9 different divisions. You've added, so I remember when you guys first started off, it was Tool Time, and you basically had you really only had the app. And then you started adding supplements and you've added swag and things. How do you find, when is the right time to scale or to start going on? Because as for most entrepreneurs, they get shiny object syndrome and like, oh, if I had success there, I can do this and then I can do this and I can add this, and they get distracted and never get the type of scale and success that you guys have experienced.
Oh, that's the question right there. That is like the big question. You know, at least for us, you know, I was speaking at an event about a month ago in California. And one of the things I really emphasize is just the lack of focus in the entrepreneurial community. I mean, there's an absolute just like highway of, like, it's literally a highway. It's a highway of shiny objects just flying by you at all times. And, you know, your ability to focus on something long enough to see results is the first thing. So I think, you know, when do you add product lines? I think is what kind of you were asking, or when do you add something on? I think once you've like meticulously proven the first thing that you've done and it's crushing and making money, and autopilot is not a real thing, but at some point it's kind of, you know, automated to the point of, you know, it's operating, it's rolling, it's not breaking down, it's well-oiled machine, so to speak. I think then you can say, hey, like, you know, we have this, you know, app, this pocket personal trainer app, Lady Boss, and everybody's just asking us, well, what supplements do I buy? And so there was a natural evolution to move into that sector, because that's what everybody wanted next, right? So it wasn't like a shiny thing over here. It was like, hey, we've made this product, this program, and now people are asking. And so really, you know, just because we're on Funnel Hacker Radio, I got to shout Russell. I remember one time I asked him, I was like, so what should I do next? And he's like, ask your customer. And I was like, what a concept, right? Like, what a concept. And so, you know, I did a Forbes interview and I said, look, like, you need to be emotional about one thing and one thing only, and that's your customers. Everything else you need to be logical about. And so it's like, just ask your customer. They're going to tell you what you need to do next. But I would say hold off until you're just going to explode by the opportunity that you're missing with this extra thing you want to add on. Like, just wait until it's boiling in your brain. You're just like, there's so much opportunity. Then I would add it on, right? Because you think it's like, oh, I just had one thing on. But the reality is, and someone said this to me one time, it was like, hey, if you add on a SKU or a product line, it 12x's complexity. And I'm like, what does that even mean? But the reality is, when you add something new on, it's not just like one plus one. It's like one, and then you add something and you're like times 12, right? Because there's...
We've seen that with funnels. We totally have. We're like, oh, because Russell loves building funnels. And it's like, well, I'll just add another funnel. And then the trickle down effect is like, that one funnel created the need for this many employees, this many jobs.
Right. Well, you have people, and then you have the analytics, and then you have the fulfillment, and then you have the product, and then you have the reporting. And then, I mean, there's like, you're not just like adding one. It's like a multiplier. So you have to be... I would say until the opportunity is just so great sitting next to you and it just makes so much sense and your customers are screaming at you for it, like that's a good time, at least maybe for the second or third thing. And then maybe once you get the hang of it, you know, you can, you know, do your thing. But I guess it all depends. It's every company's a snowflake, so it's hard to say. But I think that's a good principle, at least for the beginner.
I love that idea as far as every company's a snowflake. And I've seen that happen so often. And again, I hear people all the time, well, what do I do next? And I'm like, it depends, because it just depends. But I think one of the things I've noticed with you, it's been fun as I've watched you grow. First of all, you were all in on just marketing. You were like study. You literally digested and consumed .com secrets and expert secrets, probably more so than anyone else I've ever known. But after you then got to a point where you had to take that marketing hat off and put on a leadership CEO hat. I remember having the conversation a few years ago with that frustration. How did you actually make that, and why did that come about?
Yeah, totally. You know, I think the first thing you do when you start a company, you're just like, I just want it to work, right? And that's where it's all marketing and sales. Because like, if you don't have any cash, like you can't do anything, right? If you're not adding value and generating sales, like nobody wants what you have, and it doesn't matter. All the other stuff is trivial. So yeah, I mean, it's a natural transition kind of that happens is once you've figured out you know, your sales mechanism, your marketing mechanism, and you've been able to consistently produce sales and profit, then it's like profit, revenue, depending on what type of company you are and what kind of funding you have. But, you know, if you're like us and you didn't have funding, you have to produce profit. So once you get there, then it's like, okay, how do I get more? And that's where the thing becomes, you only have so much time. And so you have to start building a team, right? And you have to add people to the mix. And then you start adding some people to the mix, and all of a sudden you have these people you have to keep accountable. Otherwise you're just paying them and they're not doing anything, right? So then it's like, okay, well, I need some meetings and some systems and I need some process laid out. And so if someone leaves, the new person that comes in knows what to do. And I'm not starting from ground zero with every person that comes in, right? And so I think there's like a natural evolution. And then there just becomes more and more things to do, right? The problems get bigger and greater and more fun. But yeah, I think it naturally kind of happens there once you decide you want to go beyond just what the workload you can handle, and then it's, you know, adding people on.
I know you're a guy who studies a ton. So are there any resources that you went to as kind of your go-to to help study the leadership aspect of it? When you went, because I know marketing, you were all in as far as studying, but when you went to leadership, where did you go? Who are your resources to learn how to actually run a small business and then take it to a middle-sized business, now a very large business?
Yeah, that's a great question. In regards to leadership, I don't think there's anyone as good as John C. Maxwell. I mean, I met the guy, and he's actually spoken at my church, and he's just a really, really incredible. He's got like 80 something books on leadership. Just pick one of those. The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership is a perfect first one to start with. Five Levels is good. Good Leaders Ask Great Questions. That's another good one. As far as leadership goes, I think those are like, he's been a resource, and, man, I'd have to like pull up my phone. It's like, I was reading all that stuff a couple of years ago, and there's so many. I try to like only like read stuff that I can use right now. And that helps definitely. So yeah, he's a great resource for that.
So with your business now, where are you focused on? What are you studying? What are you reading? What's the next step for Brandon Poulin?
Hey, that's a good question. I think, honestly, Dave, right now, you know, it's a really exciting time. We're heavily focused back on the front end. So the advertising, the content, the marketing, because we've we've built this incredible foundation. We're ready to go. We're ready to double and be able to support those customers at the level that we want to support them and have the product and the supply and all of those things, you know, in compliance. And we've done all the things to protect our company from, you know, as you get big, the target just gets bigger and whatnot. But really it's scaling that front end. And along with that is also really maximizing profit. And so what happens is you go on this growth trajectory and you have to just, you can only do so many things at once. And so actually what we're doing right now is really focusing on scaling, expanding internationally, expanding product lines a bit, and then, you know, diversifying traffic on the front. I guess there's always a lot of things going on here, but also just from a corporate standpoint, maximizing profits, you know, maximizing what we're doing and the profit that we can have left over so that we can then, you know, invest that and use that to grow and becoming more efficient. You kind of go through these like phases where you get real fat and you just kind of like spend money and move the needle and just do whatever. And then you kind of have to like go and get skinny again and get lean and cut, trim some of the fat off. And so we're kind of in that process right now while really focused on scaling, I would say, is what's next for us.
Dude, I love that. Such a great analogy. I've seen that happen in our own business so many times where he's like, everything's going great. And then you're like, whoa, wait a second here. We got really, really fat.
Oh yeah.
We got to be a lot more focused here. All of a sudden your profit margin, you're like, we made as much revenue last year, but our profit's the same. But this year we doubled our revenue.
Yeah.
And there's no additional profit. You're like, wait, well, why are we growing and not having more profit?
Something is seriously wrong there. And it's not a bad thing. It's a bad thing if you don't know what's going on. So that's good that you're looking at the right things, but then it's a function of, you know, you've got to make decisions differently. You've got to look at how you're spending money and you don't just want to be bleeding, you know, cash out of you because you're big. And that's the game. That's why it's so exciting because every stage brings like a different level of challenge. And, you know, I think the bigger you get, the more you have to just use the data and like have great reports and understand what you're looking at. I was reading a book. Oh, I'm gonna try to pull this up right now, live right here. I'm gonna like go into my notes right now, just because I read this and it was so good. Okay, so weak managers study their business in detail and they over quantify and manage their business in general, over delegate. So people who are weak, they spend way too much time just like every little detail and number and thing and like just dig way too much because you can drown in that stuff, right?
Like, oh yeah.
What's the percentage of this and the ratio of this? And so you need to make decisions with data, but you can drown in it. And so instead, superb managers, they study their business in general. So you're like, okay, this percentage of our revenue comes from this stream and this stream. And like, you need the high level numbers and then, but you manage in detail. And so you know, as the business owner, you can dig in on a marketing campaign that's being created and make two tweaks and add 50% of the value to the whole thing in 10 minutes. Right. And so I love that concept because, you know, your instincts are usually right. And like, you just need the high level numbers. You just need to focus on the bigger things and then dig in on the details when it comes to the things that move the needle. And so that's what I've been trying to do more lately and not get too lost in the weeds, so to speak, of all of the information that's flowing around.
So what's the title of the book you're reading last night?
Shoot, I don't have it in front of me. I think it's 67 ways to,
That's okay.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't even know. It's something about 67 ways to double your profits or something. They'll pull up. I know it's 67 and it's profits. So yeah.
Google 67 profits and you'll figure out what you guys can get.
Yeah, Google that. You'll probably find it. Google's like really good search engine thing.
So, Brad, as you take a look at, I know one of the things you're always been concerned about, obviously, is you've made mention, be emotional about your customers. As you take a look at your customers right now, what are some of the main things that you're focused on from an emotional standpoint? How are you staying in tune with your customers? Because I know as a company scales, one of the hard parts is you can forget who the original customer was and why you got into that business. So how are you staying in touch with your current customers?
Love it. I'll give you two things. One's kind of more tactical. The other one is more kind of a strategy that you can use. The tactical thing we're doing is we have a company huddle every morning. And we used to just read testimonies of our customers. But now we actually find a great customer and the testimony of our products and what we do. And we bring them on. And so they're talking to our whole company every morning on Monday and sharing their story for, you know, 30, 60 seconds. We have them kind of write it out so we know the gist of what they're going to say. And that's just been so cool, because it's one thing to like read about it or like see it in a newsfeed or see a picture. It's another to like meet the human being who is like, hey, like I've been able to get pregnant now, right? Because the lady boss, or I've, you know, I'm down 60 pounds. I pulled out of depression, and like, it's mind blowing to hear and feel and just meet them on like, even if it's a video conference, right? Like they're not in person, they're on like a Zoom call. But that's been really cool just to stay connected, because, you know, the one customer is a personification of the rest of them, right? Even though there's, you know, 280,000, the one is essentially the all of them in a way. So that's been really cool. So the second thing I would say from like a strategy that we've been doing is just a massive amount of customer, like creating a feedback loop. And so the way that we've done that is, and it kind of ties into, and I don't want to get too nerdy in here, but it ties into like, you know, quality assurance, or, hey, is my support team doing a good job communicating with my customers? So essentially, whether it's, you know, an interaction they have with us over email or on our phone call, or they buy a product, or whatever the case may be, we send a survey, and we do like a one-click survey with like awesome, great, okay, and blah, right? And so we forward each one of those four responses to a different page, and we collect information from them. So like, what was great about it, right? We want positive feedback and negative feedback. And so creating that feedback loop and then identifying patterns from your customer is going to help you drive decision-making, right? And stay in connection with them and understand what they're thinking and feeling and so on. Because it's one thing to, you know, read a post here and there, but it's another to like really get, you know, personal, you know, feedback from them. And then you can kind of map it all out and look at what patterns you're seeing and then make decisions from that. So it's actually pretty simple, like just surveying and just getting that feedback. It sounds kind of like, oh, like duh, but it's amazing that we don't do that, right? We just like,
totally agree.
We just like, we see like as the business owner, this is what happens. We're like scrolling through Facebook and we look in our group and we read one person's comment and we're like, oh, we should do that. And you're like a customer, that one person, right? And like, depending on how many people you have, that might be a lot or that might be a little. For us, it's like, you know, if one person says something, it's 0.00001%. So it's like that's what happens. And so instead of doing things off of that, it's like, you know, take the emotional component, the real component from them, and then kind of map it out and look for patterns. And so that's what we've been trying to do a lot of as of late, is surveying and understanding, you know, what kind of swag stuff do they like us to launch, right? What were their favorite ones? What did they like about this product? Or, you know, what was good about their interaction, or what was bad, you know, and really diving into that and creating a better experience for them overall. So that's how we've been doing it.
Man, I love that. Thank you for that. Again, it's one of those things that's, everyone thinks, oh, of course, but the larger you get, the harder that actually is. So it's
yeah.
When you only have two or three customers, it's really easy to find out when you have
just call them. You just say, Jim.
Exactly. You're sitting there with hundreds of thousands of customers. So I totally understand.
Even if it's 200 customers, right? It's like there's literally like, we think we know because we're so smart and we're so good and our business makes money and we're just so awesome. But like the reality is like, we have no idea until we really ask and then kind of get that mass feedback, not just like from a little piece, you know?
I love it. Well, last question. It's been fun for me to watch you and Kaylin grow, not only as business owners, but also as a couple. How do you actually manage marriage and now a family with business and being at the house, talking shop? I mean, you guys are business partners. You guys grew up literally in the business. How do you manage both?
Your wife is always right, man. That's it.
I learned that a long time ago too.
I've been right like once or twice. I promise. Just once or twice. But I think the simple answer is just expectations. I think as long as everybody has good expectations and clear expectations, like, well, what role do you play and what role do I play? And what role do you play at home and what role do I play at home? What role do you play in the company? What role do I play? And if you just take the time to just lay that out, it eliminates, because, you know, it's crazy. And, you know, I'm not a relationship guru by any means, but I listen to stuff and I study stuff to be a better husband, to be a better dad. And a lot of time what you find is like people just, they have these assumptions about what they expect from each other. And you expect things and your partner doesn't even know. Like you think they can read your mind or something, right? And so having just clear expectations would be such a simple thing. And then just connecting every single day at some point and communicating, I think. The basics, man, the fundamentals, just put on your shoes right, tie them right. You're not going to trip and fall. Basic stuff, but when you do it and you do it consistently, it works, right?
I love it. Well, again, Brandon, I appreciate it. I know you've got a huge business you're running right now. I appreciate your time. Any parting words to our funnel hacking audience here?
I just keep going at it. You know, it's amazing. Like after so many waves of just, you know, it all sounds great. Like you just listen to this, you know, 20 minute, 5 minutes or whatever. And it's all like, wow, like this is so great. And what you don't see is the 5,000 gut punches I've taken to get here. And so just like expect problems and embrace them and wake up and be like, what's going to like come at me today. And just like, man, it's not even like getting there. It's just the process of working through and overcoming those challenges that you almost have to like, in some sick way, like fall in love with like, just like embracing challenge. Cause really like, that's what you're signing up for. But the result is, you know, you get to make a huge impact. You get to have freedom and lifestyle. You get to, you know, get on something like this where someone wants to ask you about your life, you know. And I was a kid, I never, what would anybody want to ask me stuff, right? So, but I would just say, expect the punches and take them and just keep going, because you're going to come out the other side like a totally different human and not even recognize yourself. And I think that process is just, it's just so worth it. It's difficult, but it's definitely worth it. So thanks for having me on, man. It's been fun.
Awesome advice. Thanks so much, bud. We'll talk soon.
All right, Dave. Take care.
All right. Hope you enjoyed the podcast. Right now, as we're going on our journey to 100,000 users, we really want to invite you along. And one of the ways we can invite you along is we want to find out what you think about what we're currently doing. So please rate, review this, share this with others, take a picture of this and post on Instagram, tag us in it, tag Funnel Hacker Radio or tag Dave Woodward. We'd love to know what your thoughts are. And most importantly, the ways that we can actually help you journey to whatever number of users or customers or community you're trying to build. Remember, you're just one funnel away.